Welcome to the Home Class Movie Chat, the place to get into all things movies. We'll leave no genre untouched, from romance to horror, adventure to comedy, and everything in between. We'll cover the good, the great, the bad, and the can I please get the last 2 hours of my life back ones you really wish that you could forget. So grab your popcorn and soda, sit back, and relax. It's time for the Home Class Movie Chat with Kat and Paul.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. I'm your host, Paul, and as usual, my co-host is Kat, my wife.
Hi, everybody.
So how are we today?
We're doing all right. It's been a good weekend. It's been a long weekend, and because it's the Queen's birthday.
And we did a whole lot of planting in our garden.
Yep. So for winter, we've been planting in the garden, so that's a great way to spend winter in Australia.
I think a lot of people would sit there and go, really? How the hell do you plant plants in the winter in Australia? But believe it or not, we don't have a really bad winter. There are some parts of Australia that do. There are parts that actually do have snow, but we are in a climate where it doesn't snow. And if it does, it lasts for 6 minutes.
And everybody races into the hills to see it. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
And when I say it lasts for 6 minutes, I'm not joking. We had a snowstorm up in the Adelaide Hills, which is where we are, where we're recording. It lasted for 6 minutes, and because they were predicting that it was going to be snowing, people raced up there just to stand on top of a hill and see if it did snow, and it did, and it snowed for a record time of 6 minutes.
Yeah, that was pretty amusing.
And it made the news over here and national news that it actually snowed in Adelaide.
Yep.
So when people sit there and go, wow, you've got a winter, yeah, we don't really have what you class as a really, really a real winter.
We have awesome winters here.
We have awesome winters.
So what movie are we doing today, Paul?
We are going to be doing the November 5th, 1999 movie, The Bone Collector, starring Angelina Jolie and Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington. I love Denzel. Denzel.
And the funny thing is that we've actually done, it's not unfortunately, but we're actually doing a little bit of a trilogy of Angelina Jolie, which was, we didn't actually mean to do it. We've got like three movies. The next three movies are going to be Angelina Jolie. So this is number one out of the three.
Yep. And that's okay. I'm all right with that. I like Angelina Jolie. We should do Hackers too.
Oh, I'd have to buy that one.
I might have it on my hard drive. We'll check.
Well, if you've got it, we can watch it for sure.
But anyway.
So this was released on November 5th, 1999, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It has got a cast of thousands, so I'm not even going to go down the list except to say Denzel Washington and Angelina Jolie are the two main stars. It had a budget of $73 million. It made at the box office $151.5 million.
Did all right.
And it runs for 118 minutes. It's actually based on the 1997 crime novel of the same name, written by Jeffrey Deaver.
Can I just do a shout out to Jeffrey Deaver? And if by some miracle he were to ever listen to our podcast, how much I dearly love the Lincoln Rhyme novels. This is the first in a series of books by Jeffrey Deaver. It's actually called a Lincoln Rhyme novel. And there's a whole bunch of them. I think there's like 10 or 15 of them, and they're just freaking brilliant. Jeffrey Deaver is a genius writer, and I just love him so much.
I didn't even realize that this was actually a book.
Oh yeah. Well, I read the book long before the movie came out.
Well, this is what I mean. I'm not a reader. I mean, I'll read very, very few things. I think, you know, when I say very few, I think I could maybe have a handful.
I feel sorry for you. I feel very sad for you.
Yeah, I'm more visual than what I am, you know, reading.
Yeah, but books are awesome, and Jeffrey Deaver is a genius.
So this is actually concerning the tetraplegic detective.
Quadriplegic.
Sorry?
Quadriplegic.
No, tetraplegic, it says. He's only moving his, he said he only moves his neck, his shoulders, and one finger. That's a tetraplegic.
Oh, I thought that was considered quadriplegic, where you basically, interesting.
No, it's tetra. Lincoln Rhymes. The film received mixed reviews and earned about $150 million against a budget of $48 million.
Okay.
So the opening of the movie starts in 1998, New York City. Okay, so the plot starts off in 1998, New York City. Now, it says quadriplegic, but it obviously did say tetraplegic. Quadriplegic forensic expert Lincoln Rimes is bedbound after an accident that left him completely paralyzed from the neck down. Did
and
it ever.
I have to admit, the scene that they did that in was brilliant in the movie, where he was working a crime scene that had been, like a bomb had gone off, and the person was like in this old subway tunnel that had collapsed, and he was going in to work the crime scene, and he goes in and something falls from up above and hits him in the upper part of his back and paralyzes him.
But now, this is something that I wanted to find out, and I don't know how you can figure it out. Why was it that when he lifted the guy's head, it looked like him?
Because he was dreaming.
Oh, okay. So it was something that had actually happened to him, and he's dreaming about himself being the way that he is now.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. So I could never understand that. I'm like, what? How does it?
That's why the next scene is Denzel Washington waking up in bed and he can't move and he's in a sweat and all stressed out, is because he's remembering and dreaming about that incident when he got paralyzed.
Yeah. Amelia Doherty, a newly recruited patrol officer, discovers a mutilated corpse buried at the Civil War end railway bed. Now, that's what she did to do this was absolutely amazing. I don't know why she was.
She is a natural born criminalist.
Yeah. So what happens in the movie is that they get there. She's just sitting there or standing there with another patrol officer having something to eat at one of the food vending trucks. And she gets a call to say that someone has discovered something on the railway track. So she was only a block away from there. So she goes there to investigate, and there's a little boy that's basically hiding behind some cars.
He's the one who found whatever it was.
Yeah. And she says, "Are you the one that called the police?" You know, and he points over towards the track. Somewhere. She runs over to see a hand sticking out of the ground with part of the finger completely missing. She manages to sweep away the gravel on the ground and sees there's a man that's been buried there. She happens to then just look to the right-hand side of her, and there on the railway tracks, there is a pile of dirt, an old bolt. Obviously, we don't know the old bolt there yet, but it's a bolt, and a newspaper that's being held down by the bolt, except the Amtrak train is coming through. So in her mind, she thinks, well, hang on a minute, this is now a crime scene. I've got to do everything I can to preserve the evidence.
Well, no, actually, you missed one point.
Okay.
Before the train started to come, she called the boy over and gave him some money and asked him to go. No, she did. And stop shaking your head at me. Yes, okay. She did. Asked him to go get one of those disposable cameras because she realized it was going to start raining soon and she wanted to get as much documentation of the crime scene as possible before the rain started to wash it away. Then she noticed, and then she realized that the train was coming, so she walks down the track and starts waving her flashlight and getting the train to stop so that it won't ruin the stuff that's on the track.
I mean, that is exactly what she does, but I think you've got it round the wrong way.
No, I don't.
Because
if I do, it doesn't matter because it's what happened. Let's move on.
Ding. That ding is the first ding of moving on.
You know, one of these days, I'm going to host the podcast and you're going to try and get a word in edgewise.
You can host the podcast. I am completely okay with being in the co-host of the podcast.
You know, this was supposed to be a joint effort, not the Paul show.
It is not the Paul show. This is a joint effort of a husband and wife team.
Yeah, right.
You know, if anyone's actually listening to this, please give us some good ratings because this is awesome. So due to clue-like objects found at the crime scene, Rame, which is basically Denzel Washington's character.
Rimes.
Concludes that the scene was staged and subsequently teams up with an initially hesitant Amelia, impressed by her natural forensic instincts. And that is actually true. She was not keen on doing this.
Well, that's the thing is her instincts were absolutely correct. You preserve the crime scene as much as possible until CSI can get down there to walk the grid, collect the evidence, and really get a feel for what was going on with this person. Like the lieutenant of the area or whatever, when the patrol people and the detectives got there, walks up and says, "So you're the one who stopped the train?" And she's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "You're an idiot."
Oh, the captain. Yeah,
he What do you think you're doing?
Yeah, he was an absolute dick.
Oh, he was such a jerk.
Because really, you know, if she hadn't have stopped the Amtrak train, it would have been barreling through there. All they would have done is found a dead body with a finger missing in the dirt.
And all the rest of it would have been gone.
It would have been gone. And also she discovers while she's taking the photographs before everyone arrives that she's walking around the crime scene and sees some footprints and goes, how do I measure the footprints? Oh, here was an idea. I'll put a dollar bill next to it and take a photograph. Scale. And yeah, and that really, and as Rhyme says, as Lincoln Rhyme says, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because not very many people would have thought. And of course, then
thanks to her, we know it's a size 10.
Yeah. And when he's interviewing her, because he's actually written several books.
Yeah.
And she read it at the Academy. And he basically said to her, so what you read in my books was helpful. And she basically fobs him off and he goes, sure, it was helpful because look at what you've done. You've taken the evidence, you've taken the photographs, and you've got a dollar bill next to a footprint that not very many people would have thought of. But you did it instinctively. And because you read my book and you've actually studied my book, because she was actually being transferred to youth offenders, which was really basically, as Lincoln Rhyme says, you want a nice cushy desk. She'd been trying to get this transfer for over a year, so she wanted to get into this. But as he said, you've got a natural talent for forensics, and I really want you to team up with me. Of course, she says to Lincoln, well, you can't make me do it. But the acting lieutenant who was working under Lincoln basically says, yeah, no, he can't, but I can. Mm-hmm. And so basically that's it. You now have to go with what we say.
If you don't want to jeopardize your career, you're going to do what we tell you to do.
Yeah. But in actual fact, he really wasn't jeopardizing her career. He was actually opening up a door to a career that she never thought was possible.
Yeah, she never considered.
No, because, you know, as I said, you know, she's just a patrolman, but she wants to get into, you know, youth offenders, which I don't think, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Don't get me wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to steer, you know, young people into, you know, a life of decency. Or helping those already, you know, on the wrong path to come back on. But I think, you know, if you've got a natural talent for forensics, my niece is doing forensic science right now, and some of the stuff that she posts on Instagram, what she's doing or on Facebook, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
You know, absolutely. Last week she did blood splatters, where it was basically, you know, stomping on tomatoes on a white piece of plastic to show you how it would, you know,
the splatter would go.
Yeah, how the different splatters would go. And it's very interesting to think that, you know, you're going to be involved in that. So,
well, it's like we were talking on one of the recent podcasts with the Amityville Horror, that if Ronald DeFeo's sister had actually fought him for the gun and he had killed her that way, the blood splatter on the walls would have been far different than it was with her having been shot face down asleep in the bed.
Yeah, that's why that part of the story of his, and just going back just quickly to the Amityville Horror, that's why that part of the story it just didn't wash with prosecutors.
No.
Because it's like, well, hang on, if you did do that, then what did you do? Put it back into bed?
Well, and like I said, there would have been blood splatter all over the walls and the floor than just on her bed.
And that's what the detective said. We noticed, and the forensic expert noticed, that there was blood splatter on the bed.
Yeah.
So that just didn't make sense.
No, it didn't. No.
You know?
Anyway.
So the killer poses as a taxi driver and, prior to Rhymes and Amelia meeting, abducts married couple Alan and Lindsay Rubin. Alan is the body that's discovered by Amelia on the railway station, while Lindsay is revealed to be alive and tied up at a steam junction. This was heartbreaking.
That was just horrific.
It was terrible. It was disgusting.
Yeah, so what he did was he left clues to try and lead them to where she was to see if Lincoln was going to be good enough to get there in time to save her, because the bolt was from the company that made the steam equipment.
Yep.
The little pile of dust next to it was clamshells. So it was only a certain point in the city that would have that. And the killer, if he had read Rhyme's books, would know this, because before he was paralyzed, Lincoln Rhyme would walk the city at night when he wasn't working and collect evidence and samples of different parts of the city. So like if something had rust on it, he could tell you what part of the city that rust came from.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to ask you to go in depth on the podcast and tell us a little bit about him, about what he used to do before he really, you know, when he was doing this.
Yeah,
so that
Lincoln
was...
Rhyme is like one of the best criminology forensic minds of all time. He's just an absolute genius criminalist. And not only is he good at the is he genius at the forensics, but he's good at the profiling.
Yeah.
And the getting in the head of the people who are doing these horrific things. So what was left at the crime was a hand with the top part of the front right. It was the index finger.
Oh, I thought it was the wedding ring.
The index finger is significant.
Oh, okay.
To Lincoln himself.
Right, yes.
Okay, that comes into play at the end of the film.
Yeah.
So it was the bone from the second knuckle down had been stripped just down to the bone. And I believe it was actually the left hand that it was done to. And then there was the bolt, the little pile of dust, and the little... And it was an older piece of paper from the turn of the century that was left under the bolt.
Yeah, it was 19.
And these were all significant, but we don't know why yet.
Yeah.
So then they go, and it starts the race to trying to figure out where the wife is.
And it was really interesting to watch him put it together. Because he was sitting there and he's like, okay, and he's trying to work out, okay, the oyster shells, okay, that would be this part of the city. And then he had photographs of every kind of bolt that had been around. And he goes, well, hang on a minute. What does SC stand for? Because that was on the top of the bolt. And it ended up to be, as you said, it was a steam company. And when he puts it all together, he's like, right, okay, now she's going to be underground.
Now, it was also significant that the bolt had been removed from something.
Yes.
Because there was oxidation on the top part of it, but not on the body of it. So it had been removed.
That's right. And he's like, okay, so she's going to be underground. She's going to be in a tunnel area. It's going to be with this sort of...
With the steam pipes.
He says, because the other forensic guy who was working with him goes, SC was a steam company, but it wasn't steam company. It was something else. But at the end, yeah. They'd put the SC...
SBC, on the top of the, I think it was.
Yeah, it was on the top of the bolt to identify what company it was. When he discovers, okay, this is possibly what, where are you going to find her? Start looking down. So they got down to the financial district because that's where they were going to go. They got down there and of course they only had like 14 minutes left.
Yeah. Cause they gave them a deadline.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There were
4 o'clock.
Two pieces of paper. One had the time on it and the other was the really old piece of paper.
That's right. It was 4 p.m. So they had a race against time. And he's like, okay, so she's going to be killed at 4 p.m. What time is it now? And the other guy says, it's 12:30. And he's like, okay, so we've got 3.5 hours to find where she would be.
Yeah.
But at that stage, Lincoln was still putting it together, finally figures it out that this is where she's going to be. They race down to the financial district. They actually get to an area where there's a steam tunnel.
So they know where she is. They can hear her on the other side of the wall.
Yes.
And they can't get to her.
No, but we actually get a quick vision of what the killer has done to her prior to them finding her.
Yep. So what he did is he chained her to a post with her hands above her head and he undid the bolts on one of the steam junctions and he turned it so it's pointing directly at her about 2 to 3 feet away from her.
Yeah.
Pats her on the head and walks away.
Yep.
And then we're on the other side of that wall. We can hear her crying and pulling against her chains. And then it comes to 4 o'clock and we start to hear the pipes banging as the 4 o'clock steam wash comes through.
The detectives and Amelia arrive too late and she is scalded to death by an open steam pipe.
Yeah, that doesn't do justice to the screams that we hear as she's murdered.
Yeah, and it's not like she is scalded, she's melted.
Yeah, I mean, the flesh is melted off of her body. It's horrific.
It is absolutely.
And I remember when he was placing her there at the end of it, she was wearing a heavy sweater, and he actually pulled it down her arms to show the maximum skin possible.
Yeah.
Because he wanted her to suffer.
Yeah. And suffer, she would have. I mean, she definitely did because...
I mean, I think it was a blessing a little bit in the fact that it was probably relatively quick.
Yeah.
But how, what a horrible, horrible way to die.
And see, the thing is that I find interesting with these movies is that there is some sick bastard out there that will eventually do this. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some sick people out there that actually think to themselves, here's a good idea. And, you know, there are so many serial killers that we can name, and I'm not going to name them, but there are so many serial killers that you can name that just have this whole thing of, let's test this out, let's test that out. I mean, yeah. You know, it's disgusting what I've heard of some serial killers on other podcasts, what they've done to human victims. It's horrendous.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, and I really hope that there is an express elevator to hell for these people.
So that then means that that Amelia has to go in and walk the crime scene.
Which she's not very happy with, because she keeps looking over. Because what happens is that there was a little opening in the wall. They actually saw her, and they were trying to break it open. But of course, the steam arrived before they did, and the entire room was basically just scalded to just melted. So it takes them about a good 3 hours before they can detonate the wall to get in there, so Amelia can work the crime scene. She walks in there, and as she said, everything is just melted.
Yep.
But she sees where this woman is, and she looks. I mean, she cannot not take her eyes off of her, because
and she's on a headset with Lincoln, the headset connection to Lincoln, and so she's his eyes and hands and feet to walk the crime scene, and as he rightly tells her, don't focus on that. There's nothing you can do for her now. The best and only thing that you can do is to find the bastard that did this to her. So let's walk the crime scene. It's 360 degrees. So floor, wall, ceiling. Keep looking. He's left us a clue. Find the evidence.
And walk in a straight line, so that way. And apparently you were saying there was something that they did to make sure that her footprints were different.
Yeah, this is one of the things from the book that they did not include in there that I have always found rather genius is... First of all, you walk the crime scene in a grid pattern so that you make sure you don't miss anything. You don't just go willy-nilly all over the place. The other part of it is they carry these really thick rubber bands that in their pockets that they would then put around their shoes so that you know who the police are versus anyone else that may have been in that vicinity.
Yeah. And
somebody else is going to walk around with a giant rubber band on their shoe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously she didn't do that, but that was really interesting when you told me that was what they do.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen them include that, because that's just one of those tiny little details that is just freaking genius in my mind. But anyway, so she goes through and she finds the clue. And
which happens to be, it's a piece of Lindsay's bone by her body and another scrap of paper.
And some hair.
Oh, yeah. Didn't include the hair in this one. Yeah, hair as well.
And there was hair, and he's like, okay, it's a bloody bone. It's been sharpened. There's another piece of paper and some hair. And he's like, okay, collect it. And then he's like, all right, tell me about the shackles. So she describes the handcuffs. And he's like, okay, we really need those handcuffs. We need to run those in the lab. You have to get them back. And she's like, well, how am I supposed to do that? And he's like, well, in the case, there is a small saw. Take off her hands.
Mm.
And that's the line that Amelia just cannot cross. And eventually gets to the point saying that if he wants her hands, he better come down here and get him himself.
Yeah, she refuses and storms off from the crime scene, which I don't blame her.
I don't blame her at all. That is just horrible.
And the thing is, what I like about this movie is it's well-paced. It doesn't drag on. You don't sit there and go, for the love of God, can we get moving?
Because the first scene is basically the cabbie picking up the couple and them realizing they had fallen asleep in the cab and then realizing that they're nowhere near home and that they can't get out of this cab. And then from there, it just goes on.
Because once again, this is not a movie that slow burns you. It starts you off straight away.
Yeah.
It keeps going all the way through, which I think is great, because it really lends itself to such a great movie.
It's a really well done film.
But it doesn't drag itself where you sit there and go, is this, I mean, I didn't look at my clock once. I didn't look to see, is this ever going to be finishing? It just goes along really, really well. So the killer abducts a New York University student who is taken to a derelict slaughterhouse and tied to a pole. God, this is disgusting.
This is just such a bastard thing to do.
The killer surgically removes a piece of bone from the student's leaving an open wound that attracts nearby rats.
Actually, not just that, he actually does a series of small cuts.
Yeah.
Across his body, and then the big one on his thigh, and it attracts the rats that come and eat him alive.
Yeah, it was very unsettling because, you know, you're watching this guy bleeding out, and he's tied to this pole with handcuffs. He cannot move whatsoever. His mouth is duct taped, and he's watching these rats slowly approaching him. And then you see this large one coming down a pipe directly towards him. And then, great cinematography, you see the rat leap at him with mouth open, ready to attack him. And it would be a terrifying way and a horrible way to die.
Yeah, that's just horrific.
But once again, he's leaving all these evidence, you know, at these crime scenes.
And that's how they figured out where it was, is the hair that was left at Lindsay's murder site was rat hair.
Yeah, it wasn't human.
No.
And so basically the killer is leading, you know, what I can guessing what they would say is a series of breadcrumbs.
Yeah, that's exactly all the way what through it is.
To try and see
he's matching wits with Lincoln Rhyme.
Yeah, to see if he's actually really that good to be able to catch him.
Yep.
So Amelia and Rhymes, again using clues left by the killer at the scene of the previous murder, find the victim's body, which has been mutilated by rats. Amelia finds another scrap piece of paper and a bone. I mean, as I said, when I saw this with this poor kid that cannot move, I mean, all he was doing is he came out of a bar and he was just wanting to go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, this, and one of the telltale signs of this movie that you know it's the killer is his cab has got a little mouse with a
noose. Monkey, and it's hanging
as a monkey.
From the
monkey with a noose around its neck. Yeah. And you know for a fact that's the killer. And he's just cruising. And he's not targeting anyone specific. He's targeting anybody. That was the interesting part about it. He didn't have a demographic as far as just, you know.
Have a connected demographic.
No.
But it is actually specific people that he's targeting.
Really? I didn't think of that.
It's not revealed until the final one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't think there was a...
Okay. So the next one that he takes is an older man and a young girl. So grandfather with his granddaughter.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're now in the cab. We know that they're going to be... We're pretty sure they're going to be the next victim. And we're cringing because there's a child involved.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And his healthcare worker loves doing jigsaw puzzles, so he calls her in to help look at these little pieces of paper that they're trying to figure out what the image, what they come together as. And she's like, well, it kind of looks like a picture. It looks like a face. So they relook at it from that perspective, and they realize that it is a printer's logo.
Yeah.
For a book publisher.
Yeah.
From the spine of a book. The century.
Yeah.
Okay, so Amelia goes down to this antiquarian bookstore and finds a book with that logo, and it's Crimes of New York, and they realize that the guy is recreating the crimes from this book.
Yeah.
The first was a real estate mogul and his wife, which is what the first two people were. How he actually got them, I don't know. That's a bit of a plot hole.
I don't think it was the fact that it was just targeting that. I think it was just he just wanted a man and a woman to begin with.
But it was specifically in the book. They killed somebody who was like a real estate developer and his wife. And that's exactly what he did. And that's exactly who he kidnapped, was essentially like the Donald Trump wannabe kind of thing.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
So how he specifically got those two, I'm not sure. But he, the college kid was a random choice, but the grandfather and the granddaughter were very specific.
Was intentional.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay. And so she realizes that he's recreating these. So that lets her figure out where the next one's going to happen. And they all go down to the docks to figure out where this is
Yeah. Now,
to find them.
the way that Lincoln Rhymes, because he's basically bedbound. He's only got movement of his neck, two shoulders, as he said, and one finger. So the pressures of very tense investigation and bureaucratic challenges to Amelia and Rhymes' involvement in the case begin to have serious impacts on Rhymes' health and stability,
And that's, what's that?
because he'd already made arrangements. Final, his
Well,
what
and
he
that's the
calls
thing
his
is,
final
in the beginning
transition.
of the film, he's been having these seizures that are getting worse. And he was talking to a friend of his who is a doctor to help him with assisted suicide because he wants to end this on his terms, not by one of these seizures.
Because he said, oh, I'm only one seizure away from becoming a vegetable.
Yeah, and that is his greatest fear is to lose his mind because that's the one thing that he's always had. So anyway, so they go down to the docks
Hang on,
and
Matt.
they
We're not
find.
we haven't we're not there yet.
Oh.
We've got lots to go before we get there.
Well,
Jeez.
get on with it
All
then.
right, I'm getting on with it. So Thelma, Rhymes' personal carer and nurse, reveals to Amelia that he intends to euthanize himself out of fear of seizures that could leave him in a vegetative state. That's exactly what you said.
We just said that.
All right, I'm just recapping. After piecing together the message the killer was sending them using a scrap piece of paper left at every scene, Amelia and Rhyme are led to an old crime novel called The Bone Collector.
Okay, we've already done. We already said this. We don't have to
I'm.
read it just because we've already covered it.
This leads them to the next victims, a grandfather and granddaughter who have been tied to a pier during a rise in tide.
So how would so how, what are you sharing that we haven't already said?
I'm just part of the co-hosting show. I'm enjoying myself. We have a long pause. I don't know why.
I can't hear you.
Okay, so
Speak up, man.
all right, so Amelia is racing around trying to find, they're all trying to find where these two people are going to be, because she looked at the book and she saw that the picture was that someone had been tied, two people had been tied to the side of a pylon in around the waterfront. So they're trying to run around trying to find where the hell these two people are.
So she finds them. She jumps in the water because the tide has been coming in and she's trying to keep them above water. By the
That's right.
time backup arrives, the old man unfortunately has already died, but they managed to save the girl.
Yes.
So we know that there's going to be a clue of some sort
And
left.
she's on the communication with Lincoln, saying, "Okay, the grandfather's gone. We didn't get him, but the granddaughter's fine. We've been able to survive. She's been able to survive." He says, "Okay, look around, because he's definitely left a clue. He left something for us. You just got to run around and try and find it around where they are." And he was saying it was going to be around the oil drums, because this was an old drilling pumping station that they were actually tied to.
Yep.
So she was looking around to try and find what would have been left. She finds a piece of bone, a part of an old police badge, and a subway map. These clues, together with an asbestos left by the killer at the scene of Lindsay's death, lead Amelia to an abandoned subway station, where she sees the number on the side of the carriage that have been tampered with to spell out.
No, the first thing she notices is that there's no dust on it.
Yeah, see, that's something I didn't pick up on.
Yeah, oh, totally. It's the one thing down there that's clean.
I didn't pick up on that one at
So
all.
that was why it drew her attention. And then she's like, okay, they've been put into a specific order. And she's like, and by this point, she's far enough underground that her headset isn't working, so she can't talk to Lincoln. And she's like, and the captain's trying to throw her off the case.
Yeah, he wants to arrest her
Yeah, for
because
tampering
she's
with evidence.
withholding evidence.
Yep. Because she, what had happened was at the scene where the college student was killed, he tried to take it from her. She's like, well, you need to sign a chain of custody card, and he wouldn't do it. So she took it back and walked it over to Lincoln so they could look at it. And he's accusing her of stealing evidence. And when he confronted Lincoln about it, he's like, well, there was no chain of custody, so it still hers.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's absolutely right. You have to have that chain of custody. But anyway, so she's down there and she can't, she's by herself. She sees the numbers and she's like, okay, I know this is significant. And she's like, what could it be? What, come on. And she just closes her eyes. She's like, okay, help me, Lincoln. And in her mind, she's walking back through. She's in his apartment. She's looking at all the evidence. She's looking around. And then it lands on a plaque that he was given that has his shield number for an award that he was given for meritorious service. And she realizes that it's his badge number.
Yes, it is. Spells
and
out.
She
Lincoln
realizes that the killer's going after Lincoln Rhyme.
Yep. The killer arrives at Rhyme's house and kills both Thelma, which is his personal carer, and police.
Loved
captain.
Queen Latifah in that role, by the way.
Yeah, Queen Latifah was actually pretty good because she wasn't in it for a great amount of time, so it wasn't all about her. And police captain Howard Cheney. The killer is revealed to be, now we didn't actually touch on this of what was going on. Originally, Lincoln had a tech guy that would come over and just make sure that his breathing was okay.
Calibrate all of his medical equipment.
Yeah. And his name was Richard.
Yeah.
And
so now all of a sudden, why are you here?
Why does Richard walk through the door? Because,
and where's Thelma?
Yeah. Because Thelma is killed. The police captain Howard Cheney is killed. The killer is revealed to be Richard Thompson, the tech guy. The medical technician in charge of Rhyme's medical equipment. Richard reveals his name is really Marcus Andrews, a former forensic expert who was convicted after Rhymes wrote an article accusing him of planting evidence resulting in wrongful imprisonment of six innocent people, one of whom hanged himself. And I think this is actually very poignant because, as he said, do you realize what they do to police in prison? I was brutalized every day that I was in there.
Yep.
And he said, but you know, I've written thousands of opinions. You planted evidence. And he said, no, those people deserved what they got. I was trying to do the right thing. And he said, but the one innocent person hung himself. So of course, you know, with that being said, he's there sitting there trying to justify him planting evidence throughout all the crime scenes that he was working. And I understand that when you've got a genuine killer that you're trying, you want to see put away, you need to go down the right legal paths. As much as you want to see this person killed, put to death or imprisoned for life, you've got to understand that there's a chain of, you know.
There's a due process.
Yeah, and you can't just sit there and plant evidence to make sure they go, but even though you're doing the right thing, I mean, you know, you look at all the hundreds upon hundreds of serial killers out there, that one bit of evidence planted would have actually stopped them from killing multiple people.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But it still has to be done right.
Yeah, it really does. And unfortunately, there are killers that got away with a lot more killings because someone like this didn't plant evidence. But you have to, as you said, you have to understand due process. So blaming Rhymes for his imprisonment and the abuse he endured during his incarceration, he attempts to kill Rhymes out of revenge.
Okay, so let's pause for a second and go back and look at the symbolism of some of the stuff that he did. So he took it from this old book because Rhyme loved studying old New York. In fact, some of the books that Lincoln Rhyme wrote were about, it was looking at crimes that happened at the turn of the century and in the 1800s. From a forensic viewpoint and giving it kind of fresh eyes on these old, old crimes. And the index finger of the first victim was done, and it was the same one finger that Lincoln Rhyme can move.
Yeah, I didn't get that until you pointed it out to me.
It was so symbolic.
Yeah.
Is it was the one finger that Rhyme can use.
Yes, I mean, as I said, I enjoyed that, and I actually like, I like Angelina Jolie's portrayal as the police officer because she's getting better and she's actually seeing what Rhymes is seeing.
Oh, she's such a New Yorker.
Oh, hell yeah, she is. And this was before Angelina Jolie started to screw up her face and with all the plastic surgery that she's gone through. But she was really, this was a really wonderful fresh pair of eyes that she actually had, and then she was being Rhymes' eyes, because obviously Rhymes can't get out of bed, So whenever she'd go into a crime scene, Rhymes was basically saying, okay, what do you see, Amelia? Tell me what you're feeling. What do you see? And of course, she'd gone through her own trauma. She had a father that had committed suicide.
Who was a cop? Police officer.
He committed suicide, and she was the one that actually found him. And he had actually shot himself.
And it's also significant to say that the first time we meet Amelia, she's getting out of bed with a man, and he wants a relationship with her. And she's like, you know, I can't make commitments.
Yeah.
She's all about not making a commitment, which does figure on at the end of the film as well.
But also find interesting, and this is just a different movie altogether, but the movie Backdraft, which is a firefighting movie with Kurt Russell, you know, in that movie, the little boy sees the father die. And of course, as the movie goes along, they have to speak to a guy who is basically is lighting fires all over the city and has been incarcerated. And while he's being interviewed, he goes, I wonder what makes a little boy that saw his father burn in a fire want to become a firefighter. And so the same way that I look at Amelia is a person that, you know, she found her father who was a police officer that shot himself, and she became a police officer. That's quite an interesting turn of events.
You have to wonder sometimes what draws people to these jobs to begin with.
Yeah.
Firefighters, cops, EMTs, you know, the ones who run toward danger.
Yeah.
You know, you got to wonder what draws them to it to begin with. But a lot of families, especially in like New York and Boston, it tends to be generational.
Yeah. So like the grandfather did it, the father did it. It's expected that you're going to do it, and your son or daughter will do it as well.
It tends to be families like that.
And it's interesting because a ex-friend of mine, he became a police officer, and he was so convinced, 100% convinced that he was able to do the job, no problems at all. And it was only on his eighth or ninth assignment that he had to go into a house. And the events that happened inside that house, he resigned as a police officer. He couldn't do it anymore.
Not everyone can.
No, but he was convinced 100% that, I can do this. I'm completely fine.
Well, there's a reason why professions that involve sirens and flashing lights tend to have the highest divorce and suicide rates.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he was well on his way. If he had stayed in the police force to possibly, you know, being a full-blown alcoholic or, you know, something along those lines.
Okay, so we're getting a little sidetracked.
No, we're not.
We're at the end of the film. We want to find out what happens.
So Rhymes retaliates by crushing Marcus's hand in his medical bed, resulting in a struggle between the two that forces them both onto the floor. Unable to move, Rhymes is almost killed by Marcus until Amelia arrives and shoots Marcus dead.
Okay.
But before that happens, mm-hmm. What happens?
Okay, so Rhyme is helpless. He can't move.
No.
And this guy has got a knife, and he's just about to kill him. So.
But back a little bit before that, when Rhymes is in the bed, Marcus starts giving him seizures and says, what sort of vegetable do you want to be?
Right.
And every turn of the medical equipment that he's got is giving
us. Well, that's why he had already put the control onto bed mode.
Yeah.
And he controls it with a straw. So he was able to lower the top of it and crush his hand.
Yeah. Because because one turn he goes, so what sort of vegetable do you want to be? Do you want to be this vegetable? And zaps him. Of course, now Rhymes is really breathing heavy because he's getting these seizures.
He's on the verge of another seizure.
Yeah. So when he shocks him again, and then he comes around the other side of the bed and says, okay, so I thought you said you wanted to be this sort of thing, you know, vegetable. When he grabs the straw and he blows into it, that releases the bed and goes, and his bed goes backwards, crushing Marcus's hand.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, in between the bed.
Yeah, so Marcus finally gets his hand out and he grabs the sheet and he pulls Lincoln Rhyme onto the floor.
Yeah.
And he has a scalpel and he's just about to slit his throat when Rhyme looks at him and he just starts to whisper.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he what? Really, and being the narcissist that he is, he wants to hear it. So he keeps leaning in closer until Lincoln actually bites him on the carotid artery.
Yeah, like a vampire.
Yeah, and basically rips out a chunk of his neck, which is gross, but totally understandable. And so the guy leans back and he goes to stab him. And that's when Amelia comes in and shoots him.
Yeah, which is an awesome,
it's a beautiful awesome scene.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, thank God, because we were so, because as Kat was saying, you know, this guy is helpless. He's laying on the ground. He can move one finger.
Oh, yeah, and Marcus shoulders. Broke his one finger, too.
Yes, he did. Ah. That's right. Yeah, I remember when he did that. He undid the, because Lincoln's always is holding a, like a mouse.
It's
a square mouse that he can actually use with his one finger. And he untapes the mouse from his hand and breaks his finger. So now he's completely helpless. He can't move anything because originally he went to dial 911 and he goes phone mode. And of course, Marcus rips out the phone line. So it's like, yep, that's not going to happen. And of course, then he rips out the power. So there's no way that anyone's going to be able to call in. He can't call out. He's basically now stuck. But yeah, when Amelia comes through and shoots him, it's like, oh. That was awesome, actually. I was like, yes, yes. So the following Christmas, Rhymes, having abandoned his plans to commit suicide, meets his sister and niece coming to visit him along with Amelia and his other colleagues.
That's actually a really lovely scene because all the guys from the, you know, his buddies from the precinct are there and, you know, and he had really pushed away anyone who cared about him because he just didn't want to live anymore. And they invite, and Amelia actually reached out to his sister, invited her and her family to come. The niece was thrilled to see her uncle. And we are led to believe and understand that Rhyme and Amelia are now in a relationship that is more than just professional.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I had this feeling that along the road, she really started to become very fond of him in a romantic sense, because I remember he'd had a seizure and he was laying on the bed, and obviously he's laying in bed, and she starts stroking his hand and she's holding his hand and he goes, there's laws against harassing or sexually abusing the
molesting the
handicapped. Yeah. And she gives him this little look like, you know, I know you enjoyed that. And he had this look on his face like, I really did. it was really nice that you were touching me because...
Well, and that's the thing. As the series of books progresses, I think they actually get married at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And apparently they've actually made this movie into a TV series, which I've never heard
which
of.
Which makes no sense to me
I'm not interested in seeing. I think something like this with Angelina Jolie and Denzel Washington, you know, it was a great movie. As I said, it doesn't dawdle. It goes,
I suppose it's possible that they're taking on the rest of the book series in the show. That's possible, I suppose.
They might be doing that. But the thing is that the way we're talking about the movie is how fast-paced it is. Yeah. It just keeps you on the edge of your seat because if it's not, you know, looking for... the young boy that's been abducted, it's looking for the grandfather and the granddaughter. I mean, it moves in such a fast pace. And then when it gets to that point where you know, Amelia does add two and two together and goes, shit, he's going after Rhymes. That's when she's racing back to get him. By that stage, the killer has already arrived at the house anyway. So really it is such a fast paced movie that it keeps you on the edge of your seat. And it's very interesting. I mean, I think anyone in forensics would be possibly gravitating towards this movie to really learn or, you know, to delve into.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done.
And I really liked it.
Love the forensic side of it. It's really interesting. You can tell that Jeffrey Deaver did his homework.
Yeah, and it was a really, I really enjoyed that movie. So at the end of every movie, we give a rating between 0 to 5 movie reels, 0 being how the hell do I get the last 2 hours of my life back, to 5 being it was a perfect movie and I'd watch it again. What would we give it?
4.75.
You did like it the other day, like 4.75. How are you doing 4.75?
4.75.
You're doing another 4.75?
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't watch it immediately again. I think this is only my second time I've watched it, but I would definitely give it a solid 4.
Yeah, I wouldn't watch it like immediately again,
no. But
give it another year or two and definitely I'd watch it again.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where when you're skipping through like Netflix and it comes up, you're like, oh, I haven't seen that for a while. I actually see that because that was 1999.
Yeah.
I never saw it at the movies, but I remember going to, yes, the video store.
I can't remember if I saw it at the movie. No, I can't remember if I rented it or watched it at the theater. I don't remember.
I definitely remember.
I'm really dating myself here, aren't I?
You are. I remember definitely getting it at the video store, seeing the Bone Collector. But yeah, you know, because back then there was no thing like Netflix or you know, we've got a streaming service in Australia called Foxtel. Wouldn't get it to save my life, but I did have it at one stage. But I definitely
there's no need to bash people, honey.
I'm not bashing people. I'm just saying that it's overpriced and I wouldn't get it.
You know, but you realize that that's slander.
No, it's not. I'm just saying, well, drop your prices and I'll get it. But no, other than that, I actually really enjoyed that movie. And this is number one of the three movies we're doing of Angelina Jolie, which we accidentally did.
Yeah, but it was good.
Yeah. So I know I enjoyed that movie. So
alrighty.
Are we going to give a preview of what we're doing next week, or are we just going to leave it for a surprise?
Let's tell people where they can find us.
Oh, yeah. Off you go.
Oh, me. Okay. I thought you were going to do it.
No.
Okay. So feel free to reach out and follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Home Class Movie Chat. We also have a website that I probably should be updating more often, homeclassmoviechat.com. And you can always email us at hello@homeclassmoviechat.com.
Absolutely.
And if you enjoyed this episode, which we hope you did, please tell your friends. And it would really help us out if you could leave us a good rating and a comment wherever you listen to this podcast.
And eventually, what we like to do, if people start reaching out to us, we will eventually go and start getting some t-shirts made. So you can be wearing the Home Class Movie Chat logo on a t-shirt.
Wouldn't that
but
be fun?
You have to reach out to us. And here's an idea. How about right now you get your phone and you text one of your friends or even call one of your friends and say, these two people, Paul and Kat, who do the Home Class Movie Chat podcast, they're awesome to listen to. Have a listen to it. And that way it builds our audience out there, which would be great to hear.
And we'd love to have your friends listening along with you so you can chat along with us.
And as I said, definitely reach out to us. Send an email to us. We will read out your email on air and be able to and do a bit of a shout out for you.
Yes, we will. So thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you at the movies. Thank you for joining us for the Home Class Movie Chat with Kat and Paul. Home Class Movie Chat is produced and edited by Create Your Change. If you would like to launch a podcast, please visit createyourchange.com.au. Please follow Home Class Movie Chat on social media and sign up for our newsletter at homeclassmoviechat.com so you can keep up with the latest news and promotions. We hope you enjoyed yourself today and will join us next time. If you did enjoy today's episode, please leave a review on the platform where you listen to this podcast. We'll be right back.